give me a better than most people probably already have working definition of perfectionism.
Okay. Well, first off, perfectionism is kind of a deeply ingrained personality style that people use to kind of navigate their path through life. So we talk about it as a way of being in the world, and it's kind of the sense that at the core, I'm not enough, that there's something that is flawed, defective. I'm just not enough either to have worth or to be acceptable to other people, to fit, to belong, to have a place in the world. And so it's a way of trying to navigate that, because when we have that sense of being flawed and defective or I don't fit, we don't just typically say, okay, that's the way it is. We try to do something about it. We try to rectify it. One of the ways that a person can do that, and they learn this often very early in life, is that if I am...
Now, back to the podcast. But before, did you know only 1 in 5 listeners finishes an episode? That's why we summarize your favorite podcasts. Visit our website to learn more.
Perfect, or if I can appear to others as perfect, then I will be acceptable to them. I will be loved. I will be cared for. I will belong. I will matter to other people. And by virtue of that, I will have worth. It will repair this sense of being flawed and defective at the core. So what it is this sort of way of navigating the world of trying to conceal imperfections, trying, yes, to be perfect in tasks and activities and that, but really it's more of a drive not to be imperfect. So it's kind of what, that's kind of the way we understand.
So this typical sort of upbringing of somebody that grows up to be a perfectionist, is love contingent on performance?
And that can be an element of it. I think what we talk about in terms of the development would be a sense of, this comes from the attachment literature that people have probably heard the term before, but also some writing, some psychoanalytic writing on the development of the self by Heinz Kohut. And it's the notion that very early on in our lives, we develop a sense of who we are and a sense of the way other people work in our lives. And so, very often, the very early kind of lives of individuals who develop this flawed sense of self or this not fitting is there's what we call an asynchrony or a non-attunement. It's at these basic, very human needs to have worth and to be acceptable or to fit and belong are not met early in the person's life. So they have a sense that I'm just not enough. There's something wrong with me. And they try to navigate that very, as I said, often very, very early in life. So they do have a sense of caregivers or family members or people that are supposed to be caring for them as they're incapable of giving me what I need. They're don't care, they're abusive, or that we just don't connect. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say that the parents are to blame or bad. It's just that it's somehow what the child needs is just not attainable in that interaction. That's kind of the essence of attachment.
And what's the lesson from the burgeoning proto-perfectionist? What is the lesson that that child takes away? That I am not getting what I need, therefore I need to be more than I am in order to get what I need. If I can be more impressive, less imperfect, then the world might support me and love me in the way that I want.
Yes, but it's not that sophisticated at that very early age. It's a sense of I'm just not enough. There's something wrong with me. And try in some sort of fashion to try to deal with that. And in a way, I mean, in a way, it's a very elegant solution to the pain of that, because a child will learn this sort of sense. Well, if I am perfect, or if I can appear to others as if I am perfect or conceal my imperfections, then all of these wonderful things are going to happen. I will be acceptable to others. I'll feel good about myself. I'll have worth, and I will fit and belong in the world. Now, it's a very childlike solution to the problem, but it's very elegant at that sort of stage of development, and it grabs on with these people. Sorry, you were going to say something. It
makes sense if you say that one of the key drivers in a child that is continued into adulthood of a perfectionist is I am not enough. Mm. Then the value judgment is if I can be more, then I may be enough. And more is more perfect, better in terms of my performance, higher in terms of my achievement, less in terms of my error and my mistake making.
All of those kind of things. But at the basis of it is this sense that, yeah, I need.
To grasp the complexities of perfectionism, it's crucial to understand how it manifests individually and interpersonally, often driven by harsh self-evaluation and the need for external validation. Up next, the discussion delves into three distinct levels of perfectionism, revealing how it intertwines with our relationships and self-perception. Curious about what those levels entail?
Well, there's three different levels that we sort of describe or define perfectionism. And one is like a dispositional or trait level, a consistent kind of need to be perfect, if you like. And, you know, very simply, we can talk about some individuals that will be characterized by, I need me to be perfect. And it's comes from the self, it's directed toward the self. And so I require perfection of myself. And it's a very autonomous kind of state for individuals. There's also another dimension, or I don't like to say type of perfectionism because they're all intertwined, but another dimension is where I don't need me to be perfect, but I need you to be perfect. I need my spouse to be perfect. I need my children to be perfect. I need anybody that I come in contact with or anybody that I have a relationship with to be perfect. And that's one kind, still serves the purpose of, Well, let me get to that in a second. I'll continue to talk about the different sort of dimensions. So there's, I need me to be perfect. I need you to be perfect. And then there's the sense or the perception that I have that other people need me to be perfect. And this can be my parents, my spouse, the world in general requires perfection of me. And those are sort of foundational dispositional ways of kind of navigating the world. There's this other level where not only do we require this perfection, we express our perfection interpersonally. Often we are interacting with other people. And it may not be that I need to be perfect, but I sure need to appear to you as if I'm perfect. So I will promote myself for perfect. I'll tell you how wonderful I am, what amazing skills and abilities I have. That's one way to try to demonstrate my perfection to you or express my perfection to you. The other is I will never display any imperfection. So I know if I do this performance, you're going to see a flaw. So if I public speak, you're going to see that I stutter, I stumble over words. And so I will never speak in public. So I will not display any imperfection. And then another piece of it is in a relationship, I will never disclose any imperfections. I will not talk about things that don't go well with me. I will not reveal to you verbally anything about anything that I see as imperfect. So it's getting complicated because there's this need to be perfect. I need me to be perfect. I need you. I perceive it. And then there's this, I need to appear perfect to you in these different ways. And then finally, there's this other piece that we have already talked about, this self-relational expression of perfection is that this dialogue, this harsh, negative, critical inner relationship that we have. So those are all different facets of this way of being perfectionistic in the world, of trying to be perfect in the world. So it does get kind of complicated.
What about sort of you, the self-oriented, other-oriented, and socially prescribed elements to this too?
Yes. Yeah, the self-oriented, I need me to be perfect, other-oriented, I need you to be perfect, and socially prescribed is, I have the perception that other people require me to be perfect.
Oh, okay. And that shows up as in, I need to be perfect, as in, I need to not do anything which would risk me not being perfect, and I need to not divulge to you anything that you would see as me being imperfect.
Yeah. Well, one is a driver of the behavior, the self, other, social. Yeah. And then these other pieces is, I can require myself to be perfect, and you're kind of irrelevant to me. But it may be that my perfectionism is about, I know I'm not perfect, I will never be there, but I want to convince you that I am perfect. And so I try to navigate the social context in teaching you how perfect I am. Okay. So that's the distinction.
Yeah, it's interesting, the difference between needing perfection and needing to appear perfect.
Yes, yes. Think of a politician. Do they need to be perfect in their work? Not particularly. Do they need to appear? Absolutely. That's the emphasis of that domain.
I imagine, have you found a crossover between perfectionism and narcissism?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I can see the lineage immediately, right? I can't see, nobody else must be able to see me at my weakest. I must pretend to be completely perfect, unfettered, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah, there is exactly those elements, especially in the interpersonal world, is about, I'm going to show you how perfect I am. Where it is a little bit different is the perfectionistic individual knows they're flawed, they're defective, they feel that way, they feel they know that, and I don't fit in the world. And for the narcissism, it at times they can almost be delusional in the sense that, okay, I am perfect. But very similar roots, very similar pathways, but they're divergent, so.
What other personality traits does this cross over with? I would imagine conscientiousness, neuroticism, maybe some depression. What else do you see typically?
Depression for sure. And in fact, the depressive personality style, which is, that's not a DSM category, that's a psychodynamic diagnostic systems category, but a very depressive personality style. There's some, neuroticism, if you're thinking about the big five. Conscientiousness, actually not so much. That's more that healthier piece. And there's a domain of research that distinguishes perfectionism from what's called excellencism. It's kind of hard to pronounce, but this notion of striving for excellence versus striving for perfection. And when we talk about, when people talk about healthy and adaptive stuff, that's more in the domain of striving for excellence as opposed to striving for to perfect the self. So there's that component. When we start looking at the outcomes of the perfectionism, and especially as we've kind of conceptualized it, there's psychiatric, psychological problems that come from it. So it's overlapping with anxiety, depression, eating disorders, all kinds of difficulties.
As perfectionism drives individuals to isolate themselves, the costs to their personal lives often go unnoticed, masking deeper issues of belonging and self-worth. Up next, the discussion shifts to the impact of perfectionism on productivity, particularly among high achievers, and whether those at the top truly embody success.
And one of the measures of success in university professors is number of publications, number of times your work is cited, and so forth. And looked at perfectionism in those university students, professors, to see if higher levels of perfectionism was associated with higher productivity. The opposite again. It interfered with their productivity. Now, having said that, there are many very famous famous people who are noted to be highly perfectionistic, and Steve Jobs comes to mind for me, but also a lot of people in the music world who are kind of like that. And we can say, well, somebody like this into the perfection, look what they accomplished. And I think we can stand back and say, wow, those are great accomplishments that the person has. But if you look at the person's personal life or their relationships in America, it's often devastated. It's often really problematic. So I guess it depends on the perspective you take. That perfectionism could be good. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think you're so right. I got all excited because this is one of my favorite pet theories. A lot of the time we use the people at the absolute top of the tree as a blueprint for how people trying to get toward that should behave. Well, look at how Michael Jordan showed up. Perhaps this is how your Sunday league baseball team should look to conduct themselves. Sure. Well, look at how Steve Jobs built, you know, one of the biggest companies in the entire world and one of the most revolutionary products in history. Well, you, as somebody that's a founder of a startup new business, perhaps that's the way that you're supposed to show up. But you said that what are the personal costs that most of these people pay? And is that really something that you are prepared to sacrifice in order to achieve that thing? First off, you've got no guarantee that you're going to achieve that. There is only one Olympian in each category every 4 years. So in order to get that, and by design, that means that out of the whatever 7-8 billion people on the planet, almost everybody isn't even in the running for that, let alone the person that's going to be it. My point being, I think it's a dangerous strategy to use the blueprint and the playbook of people who are as far on the tail end of the distribution of outcomes as you can get, literally one in a, you know, human history of a Steve Jobs, to try and justify an approach that you, somebody who's falling much closer toward the middle of the bell curve, maybe, you know, you're up on the upper end of the distribution of either success or outcomes or whatever it might be. But the price that you need to pay in order to be able to do that is one that you typically wouldn't foot the bill for. And maybe you can reap most of the rewards of excellence without having to blow your life up with the perfectionism.
And maybe you can feel worth and that you are lovable or that you are acceptable or that you fit in this planet in a different way. One of the things you said made me remember, and I hope I can get this right, I think Elon Musk was being interviewed by somebody, probably somebody, and they said, I'd love to be able to think like you or to be as creative as you. And Musk's response, as I recall it, was, yeah, if you lived in my mind, you wouldn't like it. It's not a good place to be. And I think that kind of captured, yeah, we can look at all this stuff, but what is it like to be inside that mind? And I don't know him or anything, but from that comment, it just seemed telling that.
I mean, okay. He said on Lex Fridman, most people think they would want to be me. They do not want to be me. They don't know. They don't understand. My mind is a storm. Like, all right, that's pretty fucking apocalyptic.
Well, that's, you said comment. It way more elegantly than I did.
I've kind of become obsessed with that passage. And it's for the same reason, presumably, that you have. So, okay, I guess, how much of perfectionism is about fear? Like this underlying fear, is that a big part? Is a sense of unsafety, ambient unsafety, that's sort of permeating people's lives?
I think it's an existential fear about not fitting, belonging, who am I, where am I? So I think you're right that it is about fear. And one of the ways to quell some of that existential fear, because we're social creatures, is to have connection, to fit, belong, to matter to people, to be loved, but also fundamentally to have a sense that I'm okay, I'm deserving, I'm good enough, that I have worth. And so those deep basic issues, I think, are powerful there. And what happens when they're not met is that, what exactly what you're saying, it's about, there's this this fear. One of the more difficult stages to navigate in the therapy with folks with this is when they get to a place where they're kind of considering relinquishing this sense of if I'm perfect or if I appear perfect. As they start to relinquish it, the problem that they run into is, well, how do I navigate the world? And it's just a void. So they're, it's just the unknown.
Because that previous motivation was so much be perfect.
So ingrained and so much a part of their life that there's just this void. And as humans, we don't navigate the unknown very, very well. And it can be terrifying if you just lose a way of being in the world and there's some other expectation. So within the therapy, we approach that, I don't want to say gingerly, but we approach it in a way that tries to help them with the fear of that and to get to a place that there's a different way of being in the world that can actually increase the probability of meeting those needs.
Can you explain to me the other-oriented perfectionism? Because sure. that feels a little bit more... A little bit more on the outside. I can understand how socially imposed and the self-oriented perfectionism, you know, those two things, other people need me to be perfect. I need me to be perfect if I don't fall short. But the I need other people to be perfect is still the same currency, but seems to be pointing in a very different sort of direction.
Right, right. I would imagine, Chris, in your life, if you're out in a public context, you'll have people come up will be very excited to meet you and they'll want to hang out. And, you know, you're thinking, well, hey, I'm a person here. I don't really need this.
That's all for today. Visit podsummarizer.xyz and start creating summaries of your own podcast in just seconds. Don't miss it.